Broadcasting live from the Business Radio X studios in Atlanta, Georgia, it's time for the Doctors Roundtable, a forum for conversations with Atlanta's leading doctors and thought leaders about cutting-edge trends and topics in health, wellness, and lifestyle issues. Here's our host, Tanya Mack.
Welcome, everyone, and thank you for joining us this afternoon. I'm thrilled to have a thing we all deal with in Georgia and in our work life. Today, we're going to be talking about occupational health and specifically workers' comp from the provider standpoint. And I have with me in the studio today Dr. Charles Cooley. Welcome, Dr. Cooley.
Thank you.
And let me tell you a little bit about why I was interested in this topic. You know, we have so many people, almost 4 million workers in the workplace just in our state in Georgia. And although we like to think that the workplace is safe, injuries and illnesses definitely occur. And so I was looking at the most recently reportable statistics. Something like 87,000 injuries were most recently reported in Georgia alone, equating to about $1.5 billion just in Georgia alone. Does that kind of ring true for you, Dr. Cooley?
Oh, absolutely.
Yeah, I think it's just something that is we deal with. We hear about accidents on and off in the media every now and then in the extreme, but it really is a daily occurrence in our work life, unfortunately. An interesting thing that I also found was that the medical component of workers' comp is now more expensive to administer than actually the cost of the program at 60%. The scales have kind of tipped in the last several years. So we'll be talking about that. I want to tell you a little bit about Dr. Cooley and how he came to be here today. Dr. Cooley got his medical degree from the Medical College of Georgia. I found out he's an Atlanta native, which there's not very many of you, so we're always thrilled when we get somebody that's local and comes back and actually practices here in our own community. And he did his residency in Huntsville Hospital, and he is a board-certified family medicine physician. And he is affiliated with Northside Hospital on the Cherokee campus. He's in private practice right now and has two locations, Villa Rica and also up in Canton. His practice is called MD Minor Emergency and Family Medicine. So welcome to the show.
Thank you very much.
Very good. So first, let's just talk about occupational health. Not many people go to medical school and think they're going to be doing a whole lot of that. They tend to go into disease things like pediatrics, cardiology, or whatever. And probably you thought you'd be in family medicine. It's a large part of what you do, correct?
Oh, absolutely.
But along the way, somehow, you got involved in occupational health.
Well, I think it's part of your average family practice.
Okay. So tell us a little bit about how you kind of came to be a little bit more experienced than the average physician on the workers' comp side.
Well, I started in a small practice in Canton. Mm-hmm. The two doctors that I joined were very busy. They were very well known. And I wasn't because I was brand new. Mm-hmm. And a friend of mine's wife was the HR director for a local company, and she started asking me questions. And then her HR friends started calling me and asking me additional questions. And then I started seeing their employees.
Kind of trial by fire, sounds like.
Absolutely.
Yeah. So that's how a lot of things go in life. We just kind of get drug into them, don't we?
Absolutely.
But over time, we become more adept at handling those kind of things. And I'm sure you've found the same experience.
Yes.
So I want to talk a little bit just about workers' comp in general. And workers' comp is an accident insurance program paid for by the employer, whereby if an employee gets hurt on the job, they may be eligible to receive medical, rehab, and some payment benefits. Is that correct?
Yes, depending on what the injury is,
of course. Yeah, depending on what the injury is. Also, too, there's both federal regulations around workers' comp in the United States, and on top of that, we have state-specific regulations around that. Is that correct?
That's correct.
Very good. So from what I've been able to learn, again, injured workers may be entitled to medical care if it's reasonable, necessary, and related directly to their work injury.
Correct.
And then employers are required to provide this benefit if they have over 3 employees.
Yes, just about any company has
about
to
anybody.
Have it.
Okay,
yes.
Very good. And then one thing I want to talk about is, do injured workers have the right to choose their provider, or do they have to go to what is mandated by their employer?
Well, that's one misconception. A lot of times I'll have people come to the office and they think I'm the company doctor, and that's not the case. Mm-hmm. Doctors are the companies are required to list six physicians on the federal forms that are listed.
The pink poster correct. That everybody has in the break room we're talking about probably.
Exactly. And usually one of those, I think one of those are required to be an orthopedic surgeon also, because orthopedic injuries are one of the most common injuries.
Okay, very good. So since you brought it up, let's talk about if someone is injured on the job, kind of what's the course of events?
Well, you know, we do a brochure for our companies to tell them exactly what to do, because a lot of times you're dealing, as you said, with companies that have two or three employees. And so it may be a small welding company that just has a couple of welders. It may be a body shop or somebody, you know, and their HR director is their owner or the receptionist or someone.
Yeah, small businesses, I think, are 70% of us working in the workforce.
Exactly. So they don't know what to do. So we did a little brochure that we give to our companies that basically tells them what to do. Mm-hmm. And the number one thing is to protect the safety of your employees. Mm-hmm. So if something tragic happens, I mean, if somebody gets something stuck through their arm or mm-hmm. something, obviously you activate the EMS system
right.
and call 911.
Right. So getting emergency treatment immediately is
absolutely.
Step one.
Yeah. But it depends. Again, if somebody, you know, puts a tack through their finger when they're putting a piece of paper together or something, I mean, that's a totally different. Right.
Right.
And so I think, you know, what I try to stress to the HR people and to the individual companies is to take care of your people. Use common sense. But what differs is that they have to notify their carrier that they are going to file a claim. And the employee, which, again, this gets confusing for them at the front desk. People will show up at my front desk and they say, yes, I got hurt on the job, but I didn't tell my boss. Or I got hurt last week and I wasn't worried about it at the time, but now my leg's giving me trouble or my foot's giving me trouble or whatnot. And they want to file it then under workers' comp. So we can't act on that until the company tells us mm-hmm. because the company is the actual guarantor.
Right. So let's make a big distinction here for the listeners that are listening. The carrier that would handle workers' comp injuries is not the same as your health insurance.
Correct.
Totally different system, program, authorizations, everything.
Correct.
So aside from getting emergency medical treatment and reporting the injury at work, then the next thing would be to actually file a claim with the carrier. And I think the employers are required to give you a claim form very quickly after the report, after they report the injury.
Yes. And again, one of the things that I press with the HR directors, and again, the bigger companies are the ones mm-hmm. that we see obviously more often. The HR people are – what I stress with them and what our booklet stresses is we give them a form. You need to have this information on your employees before they get hurt mm-hmm. so that if something does happen, you have their allergies, you have their medicines, you have different information on them so that you can expedite.
Help them. Mm-hmm.
Because, again, you don't want to get someone – in a worse position because people are trying to fill out paperwork.
Right.
And sometimes something very simple, like a bee sting at work, may be just a small thing, or it could be a life-threatening injury if somebody has an anaphylaxis to the bee sting.
Right. You brought up a really good point, too. I kind of want to go back to it for a minute. And that is sometimes I think employees get injured on the job and they're a little bit of shock. It's not like a catastrophic thing. And they shake it off and think, yeah, I'm okay. And then 5 days later, they're limping and having a problem. So they can report up to, I think, 30 days and still get workers' comp benefits. It doesn't have to be the day of the injury and you forfeit your benefits if you don't report that day.
That's correct. Okay. And granted, the rules change. The workers' comp regulations change statewide and federal-wide, depending on the legislature. As you know, they change frequently. But the rules are fairly strict in certain areas and fairly loose in others. If there is a legitimate injury and it's proven and witnessed, people can file later, but it just depends on multiple
the situation.
Factors. Yes.
Yeah. No one size fits all there.
Correct.
Okay, very good. So let's talk about just do you have on the medical side – You mentioned the brochure for your employer companies that work with you, but are there some, you mentioned one good thing was to kind of know a little bit about the health history of your workforce, because then you could help them if there was an emergent situation.
Correct.
But are there any kind of other tips that you would have to the employers about what to do if somebody is injured at work? Are there kind of rules of the thumb, or move this person, don't move that person? What's kind of the line between sending somebody to a provider and actually getting 911 involved?
Well, I mean, you know, we never try to make that decision mm-hmm. for a company. I'm flipping through my brochure now because we have a little mnemonic that helps people to know what to do. If I can have just a moment. It's called injury. Mm-hmm. The first is initiate first aid and transport. Notify, completing the appropriate paperwork, help ensure that your employee, et cetera, knows which doctor's office to go to, what their address is. A lot of times you'll get people, they'll send them out the door with another worker or their boss or someone, the HR director, and they don't know where they're going.
Right.
Or they don't have the address or anything like
that.
So
here's one thing. All you employers, put your poster up, but actually put where they're going on it, because I've seen so many that are blank.
Correct.
Yes. Yeah, so make sure that you put your six where I go, addresses, phone numbers, so in emergency, that's ready.
Correct.
Okay.
And then the next is judgment. Decide. I mean, you know, I can't tell you ahead of time how significant something is. And a lot of times, and again, the bee sting is a perfect example. Mm-hmm. You know, Susie walks in and says, hey, I was, you know, sitting at the table and a bee flew in and stung me. And if Susie's not allergic, that's not a big deal. But if Susie has anaphylaxis to that and she doesn't have her EpiPen with her, she could die mm-hmm. and not die 2 days later, die in
minutes.
10 minutes, mm-hmm. yes, or less. And so that, you know, judgment comes into a big part of that, especially with bigger companies. You know, again, I think the bigger companies are better organized because
right.
they have the hierarchy
That's
to handle
That's a good point,
it.
Yeah. So smaller employers, which are the majority for sure, take some of these tips into heart before you have a situation.
Yeah, and I mean, back to what you had asked me initially, I mean, that's where I got inundated with phone calls, because nobody was helping these HR directors in these small companies. Nobody told them what to do. They didn't know the rules.
Right.
They didn't know what they were required to do, what they were not supposed to do. And they started calling me by the dozens, trying to find out what they were supposed to do and how to do it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, very good. And it's probably just a matter of time. I mean, I can't think of, I worked in small companies and I've had people put staples through their fingers and spill coffee and get a burn and get really sick and fall and hit their head and all kinds of things that it happens in the moment and no one expects it. So
exactly.
Preparation up front is a good idea. I want to talk a little bit about what are the most common types you mentioned. I'm trying to remember what you mentioned. You mentioned musculoskeletal or falls or...
Well, your number one injury in the workforce is probably back pain,
okay.
some form of back pain, lower back pain. The if you read it online in different journals, they'll list it as a broader sense, like musculoskeletal injuries or stretch mm-hmm. injuries or bending injuries, that kind mm-hmm. type of thing.
Mm-hmm.
Back pain is probably, you know, the number one human ailment mm-hmm. As far as that type of thing.
Mm-hmm. I was looking at some of the other common injuries. I was wondering if you'd seen some of those, like people struck by objects or burns or anything electricity related, or even just environmentally, like asthma exacerbations from venting or mold or things like that. It doesn't always have to be just an injury. It could also be an illness.
Oh, absolutely. All of the above. I mean, we do a lot of pulmonary function testing because a lot of the companies in our area, especially in the Cherokee area, do welding and do stuff inside of tanks. And they have to wear respirators.
Okay.
And so if you got a 20-year-old who's going inside of a tank and there's no toxic chemicals in there, it's a very different situation if you've got a 50-year-old that smokes 4 packs a day. And so they want to assess their employees' ability to wear the respirators before they're exposed to situations where they have to wear a respirator.
Okay. And so what happens when a patient comes to see you? You're in the urgent care center. The employer sends them to you. They're ambulatory. What do you kind of do to triage? Or I know it depends on the kind of energy, but do you do anything special if they're workers' comp?
Well, most of it has to do, you know, when you say you, I have a lot of very talented people that work with me and for me. So the front desk employees, usually girls, are – verifying with the companies that, yes, this person was sent. And then depending on the company, they have different protocols. If they do injury-associated drug screens is one of the top things as far as a protocol. Most companies do that now. That's what I highly recommend. If someone's hurt on the job and they're under the influence of different drugs, you don't want to be responsible for them running somebody over with a forklift because they were high.
Mm-hmm.
And that is a whole different issue. But then it is separated, and the billing is different, and the paperwork side of things is very, very different. The treatment side is not.
Okay, so let's talk for the other physician providers out there. So I'm an orthopedic guy. You're going to see them, but then maybe you might refer them if they had some kind of major problem. As a physician on the physician side, let's talk about billing first. You're dealing with a totally different carrier, so you have to verify with the employer's carrier.
Yes. Well, yes and no. We do deal with their carriers too, but most of the time we're dealing with the company. We don't want to delay for a paperwork issue. If somebody's hurt or gotten cut, we want to take care of that person. That's the number one priority. All we have to know is that company XYZ said Susie got cut while she was on the job, and we will take care of it. Mm-hmm. And then we take care of her.
Mm-hmm. And then when you actually do the service and you bill, you mentioned the billing is different. What is different?
It's a different for instance, some insurance carriers on private insurance will occasionally ask for your medical records. In workers' comp, it always has a copy of the medical records goes with the bill.
Okay.
Always.
Okay.
Because there's
they're trying to distinguish what's work-related versus
exactly.
What was your past medical history before that.
Exactly. Because, and again, we can speak about this later in more detail if you want to, but in a workers' comp situation, there is other gain for the patient. It may be that the patient is mad at his boss or mad at his company or mad at his coworker or wants to get off early that day because there's a football game. You never know what their motivation is, whereas if you come to me as a private citizen, you may have three or four motivations. It's not as complex as the workers' comp situation, and malingering and other things come into play in a workers' comp situation that would not come into play in private.
So that's one of those special considerations that
absolutely.
You have to think about. Are there other special considerations? Do you have to report back to the employer, or is that HIPAA compliant? Like once they're referred to you, then you're patient-physician.
Well, no. It's very different because that's one thing we get a lot of questions about. The under workers' comp, the employer is the guarantor. They are paying the bills, so they get the records.
Mm-hmm.
And we do follow the HIPAA regulations in both situations, but it's a different situation because a third party is paying your bill.
Mm-hmm. Do the employees have the right to go to a physician of their choosing, or you would see them in urgent care as like a step one? Do you also follow patients after that?
Oh, sure.
Okay.
Yeah,
so they might return to you.
Yes. Well, everyone that's boarded, everybody that works for me is board certified in family medicine, first of all.
Okay.
And so we're all family physicians.
Okay. So you'd be a primary care provider anyway.
Depending on the insurance carrier. In private pay, we are urgent care only for certain insurances, but in workers' comp, we usually are covered.
Okay.
That's why the companies list the six doctors. These are our doctors that we have vetted and our carrier has vetted, and they are okay to go to.
Okay, and it's great that your first step urgent responders, and then with family practice, they can continue to see
you
through most of their treatment, or if as appropriate, if they need referred out or whatever.
Correct.
Any other special considerations that you have on the physician side?
Many. Okay. Very often I will tell patients, I worked in my Villa Rica office yesterday and I told a gentleman, you know, who had a relatively minor injury that I was going to have to see him in 3 days. And he gives me this, you know, why in the world am I going to have to come back for this in 3 days? It happened on the job. So I have to verify that he has recovered from this. Whereas if you have a small little cut, it's not infected on your finger, it doesn't need stitches, I may give you a tetanus shot and send you home as a private citizen. As a workers' comp, I have to see you back and verify that you're well and are able to go back to work. Mm-hmm. I made that mistake early on in my practice. I had somebody with exactly that, a small cut on their finger. They showed up at their work. After I released them. I saw them, released them, filled out the paperwork, They showed up 2 weeks later to their job and said that they had been out because of the cut on their finger for the last 2 weeks.
Yeah. Yeah. So, yeah, probably, yeah. The Band-Aid came off 10 minutes later, probably.
Exactly.
Okay. So, but that brings up a good point as far as paperwork. Generally, you know, we all know with healthcare, paperwork is a huge burden anyway. So,
correct.
With workers' comp, is that exponentially more?
Not necessarily on the patient side of things. Most of that would be handled by the HR director. The patient's responsibility, and what I tell my companies, is that when a patient leaves my office with a workers' comp injury, they will have a discharge summary and a copy of their prescription or a prescription. And so that, and they're instructed to, you need to return this paperwork to your HR director or whoever handles that at your company. Mm-hmm. And again, you run into problems that when I was in medical training, would have never imagined. But it's human nature. Someone will see me in the office.
See it as an opportunity. Maybe.
We open at 9 and close. We open at 9 a.m. and close at 9 a.m. or 9 p.m. and we're open every day of the week. So somebody may walk in my office at 9 o'clock from their cut or whatever, and they don't show back up till 4:30, right before their shift ends, to give their paperwork back to the HR director. Mm-hmm. And so, you know, we'll get a phone call and say, "Where's Billy?" You know, and
he left 8 hours ago.
Exactly.
Yeah, yeah. Okay. Do you do any on-site? You've mentioned a couple times how much you actually interface with the human resource people in these companies. Do you do any on-site education for companies?
I've done a little bit of everything over the years. I mean, I've been doing this more than 20 years. We do a lot of stuff for our companies that, like, we will, if they have a certain number of employees that are getting flu vaccines, mm-hmm. we will send 2 or 3 nurses
okay,
and
go to the site
to give the flu vaccines. We also have a couple of big companies that work with us that we do health fairs. We'll draw cholesterols or different types of, and do blood pressures and do kind of like a health screening mm-hmm. for their employees, because mm-hmm. it's in the company's best interest for their people to be healthy.
To know their risk, yeah.
Well, to be
what
healthy.
Doing, yeah.
Yeah.
So not walking around not knowing. Knowing is better. Then
exactly.
you can deal with it, yeah. I was curious, one of the things that I was surprised when I looked into this was that Georgia really has a shortage of physicians that will handle workers' comp. And one of the statistics I found was like the national, I guess, recommendation by the government on workers' comp is that there'd be one physician that handles every 1,000 employees. And for Georgia, we're a fifth of that. So we are 20% what the national average is. Has that been your experience around here in Atlanta?
It's all across the country.
Okay.
It's true. And the more rural the state is,
the harder
it is. You have a tendency for physicians to concentrate in the bigger cities where their spouses or significant others want to live and where they want to live. But the shortage of doctors is really bad right now, and it's going to get a lot worse,
mm-hmm.
a lot worse.
And as family practice, do you learn the occupational health, or is that actually a specialty that they would go into, or is it part of primary care?
You learn the medicine side
okay.
of it. The medicine is not any different.
Mm-hmm.
If you cut yourself at work, right, mm-hmm. if you cut yourself at work or cut yourself at home, it doesn't matter how the treatment is different. The follow-up may be different, but what they don't teach you is the paperwork,
mm-hmm.
the billing side of it. I mean, I have 3 billers, and they're experts in the workers' comp billing
mm-hmm.
because they know who to call and when to call and mm-hmm. how to file it, and not to send it now, but to send mm-hmm. it when it's complete, that type of thing. And
you know,
so a lot of doctors don't.
Yeah, I'm curious, you know, like malpractice in Georgia, MedMal has only a limited number of carriers. For workers' comp, are they all over the place, or are there a limited number of workers' comp that specialize just in that area? Are you dealing with tens and tens of different carriers, or are there a few that really you work with over and over again?
It's changed through the
okay.
years. It used to not have workers' comp insurance per se, like a specific carrier.
Mm-hmm.
But as those products have been sold more heavily to the companies, then the insurance company gets between the worker and the doctor and the company.
Mm-hmm.
And so then you have another party in there. And so where that comes into play is if your company is taking XYZ insurance, mm-hmm. they have to approve the physician. So if you're not on that list, then you're not approved. You might be a great physician,
mm-hmm.
but you're not on their list.
Mm-hmm. Just kind of like a preferred, the carriers have who they want to work with.
Correct, because they come to us as physicians trying to get discounts, the insurance companies do.
Do you deal, and do the carriers have, you kind of alluded to, a middle person, like a medical case management component? So if it's a more complicated or longer recovery period or something than the carriers, you have to get another layer of dealing with medical case managers trying to manage the physician side, the employer side, though?
That's not exactly a fair question, but the answer is yes. Okay. They do have case managers, and especially on longer cases, they will assign a specific case manager to follow things. If something is very quick, then I don't think they give it a specific case manager. But
Okay. So one of the things I also learned was that Georgia recently passed new workers' comp legislation. It's called House Bill 154. It was effective January 1. It looks like basically there were two big things. I'm sure there were many, many things written into that bill. But one thing that it did was it raised the benefit slightly for if you're off work, the benefits that you would, the income benefits you would receive. So that was the good news. It went up slightly, not a lot. But one of the downsides was that it capped non-catastrophic. Used to be that a lot of legislation was, if it was catastrophic, it was lifetime. Now there's regulations around that. So if you're kind of in that no man's land on an injury, you have very, you can potentially have limited benefits. Do you have any thoughts around that? Or does that not really apply to the majority of cases that you see?
Well, I mean, that's kind of the back end of the cases. Usually, well, there's not really a usually. The cases are so different in each situation. And as I said at the beginning, they pass these regulations, and we'll see how it plays out. I mean, they have another change in the HIPAA regulations coming in September. But it took 2-3 years, if not longer, for the original HIPAA to be even understood by half the physicians.
And the people that wrote it.
Exactly. And I went to a lecture where one of the ladies who wrote it, and she was like, that's not what we meant.
Yeah, but that's how it got written, and everybody's trying to understand their interpretation of it. Yeah, very good. You bring up a good point, though, with HIPAA compliance and trying to work the line between the employers, the patient, and the physician. So does HIPAA play into that at all? So the same HIPAA rules apply between the patient and the physician. And
it does, but as I said before, patients a lot of times don't understand that the insurance carrier and the company
have a say because of their pocketbook.
That's right. Mm-hmm. As opposed to their private, if they come to me privately, their documents are protected by HIPAA and will not be released to anyone except for by the HIPAA regulations, mm-hmm. whereas the workers' comp is different. It's immediately released, as I said before, to the mm-hmm. insurance company.
Even with the initial invoice, you said.
Absolutely, because they want to see what the injury was because, again, I have had case after case that many of them I can't go into mm-hmm. that are people trying to
right, so I was in a car wreck 3 months ago. Nothing happened to me on the job. I fell over, but now all of a sudden I want to kind of go back and recoup.
Exactly.
Yeah, okay, all right.
My rashes, the worst case I had was my rashes from a chemical burn, and it was not.
Well, I'm sure you've seen it all and heard it all, haven't done it through all these years and years and years. Well, one of the things that I know is that, as much as we talk about statistics and regulations and things like that, the patients are going to remember stories that you have. And I know that the goal is a healthy worker and returning to work as quickly as possible, I'm guessing.
Oh, absolutely.
Yeah, so yeah, that's the goal.
As I said, the number one point of all this is to take care of the person.
Right. Take care of the person, correct the problem, get them back in the workforce and safely and as fast as we can and safely as we can. So are there any patients that you remember that is a story that stood out to you about successful management of, you get a case, this is how we worked on it, this is how they worked through the system, and this is how they were able to get back to work pretty quickly?
Oh, absolutely. Yeah, there's, being outside of Atlanta and growing up in Atlanta, that's one of the big advantages of Atlanta is you have access to the best medical care in the world.
Right.
You can go to, I don't know if I should mention all the hospitals, but mm-hmm. I mean, Northside Hospital mm-hmm. delivers so many more babies than any hospital around. Mm-hmm. St. Joseph does so much heart stuff and vascular. Children's, mm-hmm. I mean, goodness, that's the best care in the world. And so being outside of Atlanta, if you need something medically, you can send
it. It's right
here. One of the first cases I had scared me to death. I was in a small 3-man practice. And a older guy, you know, who didn't know much about ERs, drove himself to our back door with his left hand wrapped in a towel. And he had cut almost completely all of his fingers off that hand with some type of saw, mm-hmm. and drove himself there and walked in the back door with a bloody towel. And we were able to get him stabilized, get him to the ER, subsequently transfer him. I'm not sure which hospital, it might have been Grady, mm-hmm. to the vascular guys and to the bone guys, and they reattached his fingers. Mm-hmm.
So continuity of care is a big component of what you do.
Oh, sure.
Depending
absolutely.
Upon what you get. So, yeah, certainly medical access is a good thing, but coordinating everything in a timely manner is also key.
Oh, sure. Yeah, I mean, but again, you want to make sure the patient gets taken mm-hmm. care of. It doesn't matter necessarily about the paperwork in the up front. But again, you said a lot of physicians listen to this show. You got to do your paperwork or have someone doing it.
You'd be working for free.
Absolutely. Yeah. Very frequently.
In a complicated system.
Very frequently in my urgent care, I'll have one of my front desk staff following the patient around with a clipboard taking down information because we're treating the patient already to make sure they get taken care of.
Right, right. Yeah. So some of the things we've learned today. First, take care of yourself. Take care of your workforce. Get emergency treatment if you need that. If you're an employee, make sure you report the injury so you get the clock ticking and get yes. access to the carrier. Fill out the claim form. You have a limited time to do that, not forever. And then work with your providers to get back to work.
Absolutely.
And from the doctor's side, be cautioned about you're in a big system. It's different than what you're used to on the health insurance side.
Yes.
It's paper intensive, so follow all the rules. And we have good resources. So medically take care of the patient like you would any other patient.
Yes.
Okay, very good. Any tips that you would like to, believe it or not, we're at the end of the show. It flies by. It sounds like you start and you have a conversation, you look up at the clock and we are all done. But I want to give you an opportunity to talk a little bit about your practice and how people can find you and where you are in town.
Okay, we have two locations. It's MD Minor Emergency and Family Medicine. We're in Canton, Georgia, off of Riverstone Parkway, and Villa Rica off of Highway 61, exit 24. We're open 7 days a week, 9 a.m. to 9 p.m. We only close Thanksgiving and Christmas Day. We take just about anything. We do not see Medicare or Medicaid, mm-hmm. But we take almost all other insurances, and we do a very wide range of care.
Very good. So we're glad we have physicians like you, whether we're hurt on the job or we're private citizens looking for who's open at 9 p.m. when our kids had that fever
yes.
and the pediatrician closed at 5. I also want to leave the listeners the phone numbers to each of your locations. So to find Dr. Cooley in Canton, you could dial 770-720-7000. And to find him out in Villa Rica, 770-456-0911. So thank you so much for being our guest today. We really appreciate you coming and shedding a little bit of light from the patient side, the doctor side, and the employer side about how we navigate workers' comp. We appreciate you being here.
Thank you for having me.
All right. And for all you listeners, thanks for tuning in. Please visit our sponsor, www.healthgate.com, for offers and help that they may be able to help you with. And we'll catch you next time. Thanks so much.
The Doctor's Roundtable has been a production brought to you by HealthGate and Business Radio X. HealthGate is a groundbreaking website where board-certified doctors and specialists offer savings on out-of-pocket healthcare costs. For more information about HealthGate, please visit www.healthgate.com or call 404-692-5377. We hope you tune in next week, and thank you for listening.